I was part of this archive collective Bakma. I'm one of the co-founders, and that collective, we came to a point because we were in several video activist collectives over the years, and it's we had another collective, we started another collective in 2013, Video Occupy, during Gezi uprisings, and then we were like, we need to archive because archiving has never been part of our practice, and we lose stuff, and we have so much, and there's a whole history. If you think about different people who were involved in these video activist groups, and then we started making this archive, digital online moving image archive of social movements in Turkey, BAK.MA.
Hi, welcome, Belit. Finally, we get to talk.
And
so maybe first we'll just introduce the setup, and then you can shortly introduce yourself. Basically, if you want to ever change what we're seeing on the screen, you can press cut or auto. It's kind of the same thing. For instance, we can go fully onto the video that we'll be screening of yours. We can have it in the background and us in the forefront. And we also sometimes utilize the web camera, but it's not necessary. So basically, we're switching between these modes. However, the main part of the content is our conversation. So if you want, just welcome here at The Void. We're a audiovisual...
Experimental audiovisual research, specifically on artistic-based research and political research. So.
And political research.
Yeah. So that's why we thought you were a very fitting person for interviewing this evening. And with that...
Yeah, but feel free to introduce yourself.
I'm Belitsa. I'm a moving image artist, a researcher, and educator, teaching in art academies in the Netherlands. I just did a workshop on contextualizing absences and presences in the archive, contextualizing the archival material that we encounter, and that's something I'm interested in, and I'm also interested in like how to organize workshops that are like hands-on, but also that relates to my work, where I present my work, but also theoretical kind of relations that the work has, and a hands-on way of looking, like taking a piece of archival material and working with it, and then what does that mean? And because the moment people do that, that's the moment that the questions really arise, and especially, I mean, I just said today, which came to me while during the workshop, like I just said, like it takes a village to enter an archive, like it really takes a village to contextualize material, and it was really nice. I don't know, I introduced myself and I kept going, so let me know if I need to stop. It was really nice because we were like 19 students, I think, and they were like in groups of five. Looking into this one specific moving image piece and researching that, like visually, textually, and contextually, like what has been happening in that period, it was a newsreel. So that is something I'm interested in, and the practice of it, the hands-on work of it is something I'm interested in. I make a lot of essayistic moving images, as we can see on the background.
That's why I was actually curious to know, because I think it's like sort of natural with the type of content that you work with, that your practice would sort of flow into a pedagogical one, and a lot of your video essays are also somehow about contextualizing political contexts and showing a different perspective or a subversive perspective. I think within your teaching and pedagogical practice and workshop practice, you actually do kind of the same thing that your video essays are doing, but in a little bit of a different format. So I was wondering, like, how do you see your like archiving or like experimental archiving practice like differentiate from your pedagogical practice? Like, is it the same thing? Like, what are the differences as it's so sort of like education, information, activation focused, your art practice, I think. And the same goes for your pedagogical one. And I wonder if that's also like a kind of different form of archiving and contextualizing in some way. Like, where do you draw the boundary, or does it sort of like organically enmesh? Or like, it clearly does, but like, yeah. Is it exactly the same kind of?
This is a really interesting question, I think, because like once you make a work, a video work, and what you think about, it's like it's quite a, it depends on your practice obviously, but it can be quite a, you know, being in the studio researching, meeting people, creating these encounters with the archive, with the archival material and the subjects of these events. That's what I'm currently doing. And the audience, right? Like it finishes, and then you show it to a group of people, and who does it speak to? Is kind of becomes a question. And then of course, like in the process, you share it with others, etc. Like all these like gatherings, etc. But research groups, and when it's a classroom, and it doesn't have to be students. It's a group of people that you need to. I think it's the pace and how you need to kind of slow things down, because you keep doing the same thing and it needs to communicate and you need to articulate what you do, which then becomes a whole thing that you need to learn in a way. It becomes a whole research in itself. How do I communicate this? That I don't have to do it step by step in any of my videos, and a video work should not have that responsibility of going step by step, because the video work does its own thing. It has to have its own logic and existence, and it can also say like I'm withdrawing this information from you for reasons that does not make sense for you, but it does make sense in my thinking, right? Like when it's a group of people, it's a workshop, then it's a different way of communicating, and a logic. It again has its own logic, but it needs to make sense, because that person. There is, it's a conversation, it opens a space, like as I said, like there is, it still becomes the space I discover things. I call it like it takes a village to enter an archive, and I'm like, yeah, let me think about it, you know, like there's to create that space, which it does not, it's not only work, but it's also a space of research, of articulation for me, and then it becomes fair to everyone, because it's not like this teacher teaches you how to do things, but you figure out, and I figure out also. So it also feeds back to my practice. So I do see it quite connected, and I do see it as a space of like discovery and making connections, and also learning from someone who looks at this footage for the first time and who does this work for the first time, because I lost those eyes. Like I don't do it for the first time, and that encounter is a very valuable encounter that I remind myself through these workshops. Yeah, there's more, I think, but thinking about it is really nice, really, good question, I would say.
Thank you.
I really like what you just said, it takes a village to come into an archive and contextualize an archive. And also you're working with workshops. So you have all of this like community-based dimension, which I found extremely interesting. And I just wanted to know a bit more about like, how do you see knowledge production or knowledge creation when connected to like something that has to be done in a community or something that has to be done collectively? So I don't know if I expressed my question right correctly, but how do you think like a research practice or a knowledge production practice as something that has to be performed collectively?
Yeah, I think like when I said it takes a village, I think it's an articulation of also a wish, I think, that I would like to not be alone in an archival institution and searching these archives by myself for my own project, etc. But this collectivity is something that is really at the center of it, because I'm looking at collective histories of like labor migration of women from Turkey from 1978, who struggled to get better conditions, and only through meeting them, through having these conversations with them, I have access, or maybe that we shouldn't call it access, but I can feel that archive in a different way, right? And archival work is unfortunately, I think archival artistic work is unfortunately quite anti-climax, quite, you know, you do a lot, it's like laborsome, and it's not necessarily giving back as much as it takes because it's a lot of work. And for me, and I can't, like my moving image practice is based, it's rooted in video activist practices, which have always been collective. Like I learned how to film and how to edit and etc. Like all the kind of basics and the first productions, first things that I made, they have been always made in collectivity, and not even like not writing your name on them, etc. So that collectivity is part of the moving image practice for me, or practice in general for me, artistic practice, research practice for me. So I'm for me also contextualizing only could happen in that collectivity, in that communal.
Yeah, right, because an archive is always about someone, right?
Or always. Yeah, and it's never only about one person, also. Isolation becomes the problem in a way. And in the workshop also, what I was trying to do is like to approach these matters together. And one sees something, and then the others start seeing other things, and then we add on to that. Like then we start creating this like new ways of understanding something, new ways of approaching a footage, a context, a certain time period. So something happens in that space that is only possible through being together. I guess that does this.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome.
Clara?
Well,
I think Tomás has a question,
Regarding
the way that you actually began your practice, I find super interesting as like a collective and extremely like political and activist and practice. Reacting to the particular political context that you were placed in at the time. I wonder, like, where does then, you know, because we were talking about audience before and, like, who is this dedicated to? Who sees it? Like, new set of eyes. Like, how were your collectives, like, involved in the distribution of the videos in your two starting off? Kind of political video archiving collectives, like there were two, right? I remember, but how was the distribution handled? Like, how important was like the act of making more important, or you know, was also like the spread and dissemination also essential? And like, who does it reach? How does it reach your audience? Like, how does it kind of spread? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit, it's like I need to explain the whole context. Because it doesn't translate really well, I think, because of like when we started, like we were filming demonstrations and riots, and we were part of those riots, and you would be in the riot. Like, it's not that you're gonna film from the police side or the journalist side, but you're inside, you're running away from the police together with the demonstrators, and we were following certain political groups, some of which are like partially, they're not like necessarily publicly doing everything publicly, or organizing in ways that kind of edges what is legal and illegal in that context. And then what we did was like really making these, I mean, it's really long time ago, CDs, and giving those to the people who we filmed during the demonstration, and they started watching themselves. So distribution was in that way, and then there would be CD stands of like films, and we would put our CDs on those stands, and then people could like find them. It was like more like this way of distributing. And then there was, I was part of this archive collective, Bakma. I'm one of the co-founders, and that collective, we came to a point because we were in several video activist collectives over the years, and we had another collective, we started another collective in 2013, Video Occupy, during Gezi uprisings, and then we were like, we need to archive, because archiving has never been part of our practice, and we lose stuff, and we have so much, and there's a whole history. If you think about different people who were involved in these video activist groups, and then we started making this archive, digital online, moving image archive of social movements in Turkey, BAK.MA, and then we collaborated with two people based in Berlin for the infrastructure, and it was. I'm missing your question. So that was like how that came together, and my name is not there. Like, it's not nobody's name is there. It's we brought all, and we started asking even more people to bring footage, different groups. I miss your question.
No, I mean, you actually totally answered it. Okay. Which it was basically just dealing with like distribution and what was and like what was more important, like the act of making or the act of distributing, or being in it, or rather like was it for a particular audience. But I think you totally answered the question. Actually, thank you so much for sharing this website, because
we had a website also before this. In other collectives had their website, but then you know the website, we don't pay on time, it goes down, and then you lose the footage. Where is the footage? Who has the footage? La, la, la. And then there's all kinds of like losing, and then now through this website, this archive, we have more and more stuff together. And now it changed, like the archive changed into different directions. I'm not involved in the group anymore. But it's searchable, downloadable. You can even make an account and edit it. And also, it's connected to other movements, like in Mozirain from Tahrir Square. They have a similar archive, 858.org, I think. I can't remember. They have the same infrastructure. So there are other like Arab Spring uprisings that had. Is that 858.org? I'm not sure. Is that? If you could like look at Mozirain and Mozirein. So we use the same infrastructure. I-R-E-E-N. Mozirain. Tahrir Square, Mozirain Collective, and they have There is a website. Wait. If you up, what is that? Is there a website there? No. Maybe go a bit down. Yes. 858. And enter the archive. Yes. So we use the same infrastructure.
Same protocol.
Yeah. So like they have their. Sorry.
No. It's okay. I can reach. It's also the same protocol, right? Like it's the same infrastructure in some like. Also software infrastructure.
I'm
a huge fan of Bagma. I'm a huge fan of actually this project, and just like Void actually kind of like took a lot of inspiration from that. So in where we are now actually started also from what you did, and I think it's actually very nice. What where we are now also started from what you did, like from Bagma, in the sense of like Bagma, at least for me, was a big inspiration for going into this kind of field, because I think it's really like a unicum that could be sounds in the sense of like it's really interesting for so many different levels, in the sense of like not only for the content but also for how it's built, how it's maintained, and you know, it's not a server on Google Drive. You know, it's a server that decided to be independent and to have an autonomous structure. So in that sense, a lot of the research we are doing really fit also with this. At the moment, we are streaming on Twitch, so it's exactly the opposite. But what we are researching is how to go off the big platform and to try to stream from, for example, PeerTube or a platform that give you some sort of autonomy. Sorry, I'm just fanboying at the moment, but like, actually, I had another question that is connected to some of the videos in back, but I think also your practice, and it's from what I understand, is really situated and activist research. I have some similar experience of filming from protest and from that perspective, and something that for me was always a challenge was that I kind of felt uncomfortable in that situation, because when you have a camera and you're in a protest, there is always this feeling of probably I shouldn't do it because faces, but at the same time I really have to do it because, you know, we have to have testimonies. This can be a witnessing tool, so many levels. So in that sense, I think probably it's a bit of a personal question, and if you don't feel like answering, it's totally fine. Like, how did you approach this? Did you have the same tension, or but feel free also to leave it in the air. And
it's a long conversation, I would say. It's a big topic, because I mean, there are different levels to it, like the video activist group who filmed the actions of certain groups and gave the footage to those groups. That's like, that's very clear, right? And then also spreading it, putting it online. In Bagma, for example, like we had to go through the footage and really think about what is our responsibility in putting this footage online. Because, I mean, recently there was court decisions imprisoning people for life, imprisoning people for like 18 years, several people, because of Gezi protests. So we had to take certain decisions there. And it's really difficult to take those decisions, because there's also another layer to it, because Gezi protests were so such big scale. We had this kind of saying. We came up with the saying that said like, from the image of an action or a demonstration to the action of an image. So like, it's not that we're only filming, documenting a demonstration, but the image itself is an act, is an action. in that sense, not like showing certain footages, certain things, uploading certain things, also pushes what is legal and illegal in this, in the eyes of larger community, like you know, in the eyes of what is it also forms public opinion, right? So so there are several ways of looking at it. It's a really complicated question. It's something that one comes to inevitably, because that's like, because it's your responsibility. It's an ethical question that you need to deal with. Like you can't surpass that. No. There's no way. And you can say like this will form a public opinion, but then you might be risking lives of people, right? Like so, it's really difficult to answer.
Yeah.
But it's also a very necessary conversation, and it's like context, like according to the context. Like, 2013 was Gezi. 2014, it could change opinions. 2023, it might be very dangerous in the context of Turkey. So like, it's also we need to, you know. It's a different conversation now than it was in 2013.
No, indeed. And from my personal experience, it's completely, like I did this in Italy, in which there was not that tension. And also like it was definitely easier to film, but still the environment in which I grew up and I started filming was definitely anti-video for every because it's the hacker community is the and you know like the idea of putting just also filming not only for publishing but just for having it in the hard drive, and the fact that police can stop you and take that SD card, it's something that you don't do, right?
Yeah,
and
then we smuggled hard drives. It's not that you keep them at home under your
of course you do, and you always have two and one place and one in another, but then. Yeah, I don't know. No, thanks for your answer. Like it's.
Yeah, thank you.
But thanks so much. It was really interesting to read.
Okay. I will come here maybe at this point. Oh, it's worth. What I wanted to ask you about in this, you know, on this kind of lore, it's. How do you deal with the narrative of this image or video? Because in this sense, why is it so dangerous? You know, it's not just testimony. It's not just, you know, something that it's without, you know, the image or the video itself can be taken of the context and used for the opposite reason it was made for. You know, you can think it's objective what you see and what you witness, but for another person, that's not even enough. Like, in plain sight, it still can be used by this narrative for, you know, this other purpose. So how do we build our version of the story in a way that is engaging and careful about, you know, not trying to put, of course, just our opinion, but to convey the message we want to convey, you know, and to arrive to this kind of, objective, because if you do this, there is a name. So if this image is an action, what is your action that you want to kind of push? And how do you keep like faith to that and also protect the people that are, in a way, if they're there, they also like put themselves at risk. So not to make this kind of sacrifice useless.
What do you mean not make this sacrifice useless?
That in the moment you made this video, this is already like this exposure is already done. So, how do you use this material in a way that is, the best way of achieving the aim that you want in this content? So, raise awareness, I imagine, or like just keep also the memory of this for the next generation. I can think of different topics, and maybe you can explain what is your interest in this. Sorry, because I don't really know so much about your work, but I'm really interested in this kind of the image as a tool, or in a way, but also a tool that you need to shape. It's not that you just take it and you put it on the internet and someone will take it in the way he wants to take it.
I mean, in relation to the earlier question, it becomes, because it's not your story, it's not your image, it's not you that you will risk, right? Like, and the sacrifice is, it might not be a sacrifice, because showing up in a demonstration and being there has a lot, has many, many meanings than a sacrifice, I would say. So it's also like positioning ourselves, right? Like where, as a as someone who did film this thing, like I'm also responsible in the moment I distribute it. It's a different act than someone showing up in a demonstration. It's I'm distributing it. I'm making it available for other people. It's more than an eyewitness, like someone saying, "I saw this person." It's utilized as a proof, right? As a so that's kind of is the maybe the border and the reason of the of this like. Further elaboration on what to do with those images. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yeah, no, I'm just, sorry, yeah, because I talked a lot and maybe it wasn't clear. It's just about, like, I feel that sometimes also when you position yourself politically, I always feel this kind of, this is my opinion, I don't know if you all agree, but that right parties, they are really kind of, you know, good to engage with people and with their emotions. And on the other hand, left parties, or like just generalizing, are more kind of ethical, and they want, you know, to keep their moral like really, you know, strong. And in this kind of situation, they will want to do the right thing. But on the same time, I think that sometimes this lacks of the this engagement factor that makes also this go be destroyed in this, you know, big fight if we want to polarize it. So how do we create a narrative that is appealing but it's also like true in the, you know, in the, this really complex world, because the truth is can be true for me and false for you. But I don't know, I'm curious if you believe in this, like, should we create a narrative, or should we hope that the person that is seeing this will get it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a difficult question, to be honest, for me to answer. Should we create a narrative, like, or should we think that the person would get it? It's a very complex question, because it has like are we talking about demonstrations? Are we talking about?
In this case, yes, like your personal experience.
Yeah. And what does it mean to create a narrative? Like it becomes a bit elusive, the question, to me. Like I'm trying to kind of approach it, but I'm like, okay, but what does this mean? You know, I find it a bit difficult to approach it, maybe, and I wonder, what do you mean by creating a narrative?
Yeah, I will try to synthesize. Like, when you create this archive and you post, mm-hmm. like, the video that you made, and this mm-hmm. is objective, you know, it's something that you recorded, but...
I mean, everything is subjective, right? Like, I mean, I recorded it from my own frame. I chose to record one thing and not the other thing. I chose to be there and not somewhere else. I chose to cut it in this the way that I edited it, right? And I chose to put it uploaded it. Like there are all these, the moment we say objective, that also has the potential to erase our role in doing things. So how to not erase ourselves in that, and not only because we are makers and we should not be erased, but also because our responsibility gets erased. So we have a responsibility, like I did that frame, I did film this, and sometimes I did it wrong, right? So that's how I see it, I think.
Confusion. It's just
sorry.
You just said some very wonderful things. I feel like there's this ambition from filmmaking or from image making mm-hmm. to reproduce the objective, like objectiveness. Mm. And as you said, it is about almost like erasing responsibility for creating that image, or for like the person who's creating that image. And I was just like, while you were speaking, I was just thinking, so if we cannot ask images to be objective, can we?
We can't.
Yeah, I agree. We can't.
That's not how it works, I think, with them.
But can we ask images to create ethical bonds? Because you said so. When the moment we create an image, we select a framing, the moment we upload it, we have an ethical responsibility. So then images, would you say, or would you do you think that images create ethical, like what images are doing is maybe not showing objectivity, but creating bonds or ethical bonds, or almost like a sense of recognition of the other.
Recognition of the other.
Yeah. Creating, I'm just thinking about it out loud, but creating bonds towards all of the different people participating in all of the different aspects of that image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in their relationality to other images and lives, in a way. That's what you mean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's I can talk about the ethical responsibilities of a maker. I don't think images have ethical responsibilities.
No. Maybe that's what I mean. Like images like give us ethical responsibility. We are the one. We are the one.
Like
who
the moment
the
you approach. Yeah. That's what I. Yeah. That's how I can make sense of it at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the question?
I'm just like, I just made like a connection in my mind while you were speaking to me, I don't know, just very powerful. This idea that images give us an ethical responsibility towards somebody.
And it's something we approach, right? It's not that we do it right or we do it wrong. It's like we approach and we fail and we try to approach again. And then what I was also saying inside, like it's like we also change a lot, right? Like we are not like fixed in time, like and place. Like we have an autobiography that says like born then, da 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 da, like those are facts. But then we're constantly dynamic and changing, right? So, and then that means we change, our positions change, and then our relationship to those images that we edit change, and then it's about finding that space where we relate to them, relate to our making, basically, and that ethical responsibility, keeping that ethical responsibility, and that responsibility changes according to where we are as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's, I mean, if you think about like some, if you're 20, then a student, your responsibility to a certain image is different. If you're like not a student, but like really established and like you're in a different part of your life and your responsibility is different because of like what you can afford and what you cannot afford in life and what power you have in life, etc., etc. I'm going somewhere. So like this is it's something to approach. It's not like you reach it and that's done. You approach it and you need to constantly reconsider and reapproach. It's a continuous process that doesn't end.
Yeah, of course, we don't have like a set of rules, right? You have to it's like a normative understanding, but more like a contextual.
Because that is like, again, goes to the objective of like, you need to do this and then this and then the third step and No, like there are steps, I think, but like then you need to reinterpret them according to where you're at, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I would like to try to add something, but also if we are tired, we can slowly stop also, because I was just noticing it's 5 hours and 59 minutes that we are live, so it's almost 6 hours, it's actually 6 hours. Okay, I'm going to try to make it very short, but like I think it could be a nice conclusion also of this entire day, because this is a pop-up TV studio. The idea is that we are from a research center at the university, and we are technically we are a researcher, and this is what we do to research. In a sense that this is both an event, a video, and for us it's also kind of a publication. It's all together at the same time. But what is most of it is kind of a space for like meeting and having new conversation. But then, like, I think I just want to connect with this idea of objectivity, because we are researchers, right? So we should publish in this academic context in which someone sometimes says that that language need to be objective or some sort of objectivity, even though we clearly don't believe in that. And then what we want to do is to stop, at least this is like the group would like to do, is to stop writing and do videos instead. Exactly with this idea of not being objective, but being very much subjective and political. And in this sense, I think probably there is some sort of connection between the practices. But then there is still the question of like, how, like, it's very difficult, especially in an academic context, to try to do this or try to kind of overcome the idea of text or written text as some sort of superior to moving images, for example, or to audio, or to any other formats. So in that sense, I think I saw that you do a lot of video essays, and that's something that like really also connect to what we are doing. And I don't know, I think my question is probably trying to look at the future and try to see how do you think, like, do you think this subjective and political research can continue with the video? And if yes, like, I don't know, I won't try to give some sort of positive, but in the sense of like, should we convince the objective academia that this is a way to go, or we just leave and do something completely parallel and not do it? I don't know. This is a very.
I don't know. What do you think?
I do not want to convince anyone. I just want to continue doing the practice and be political. Yeah, it is. But I think it's interesting to share this and exactly for like whom does this kind of practice, and to say like, you know, it's not, we are not weirdos that want to do a different things because it's trendy, but also because I think we find some real differences in the approach and the way of you know, displaying results, like a lot of. So I don't know, like, have you ever questioned yourself on this kind of methodology or output? Or do you see something that is just coexistent and I don't know. Do you understand the question, or?
I'm not sure. can you give a bit more, like,
context?
If I have any methodological questioning, can you? That was your question, right?
Yeah, I think it's in between methodology and publishing formats.
Publishing formats.
Yeah.
Writing or moving image.
And also the spaces for this, right? And
you're
and
in academia.
We are a hybrid. No, we are not. We are in applied science. So I think in a sense we are in the same sort of applied science is
applied science, okay.
So it's not academia.
Yeah.
I personally come from academia, okay. And I'm very happy
that's where the question comes from.
Yes,
right?
Probably. But not only actually, because it's
for me it's
tell me.
But also in a context like this one, for example, I don't know if it's always academic. Of course, academia has a lot of influence in this, but I have the feeling that there is a bit of a, I don't know, it's not only there, it's a bit bigger as a...
But ask the question again, I'm so sorry. Like, how, I don't, like, different publishing formats.
How do you see the future?
Because
of
I don't write articles. Like that's not publishing
format for me. We don't do that either.
Something I think about as something like, oh, shall I write an article or shall I? You know, that's not part of my world, let's say.
And that's very nice. And
I don't know if it's nice, but like that's consideration. That's why I ask. Like, it's in your world. It's in your world, but that's not in my world, at least. But do you mean also artistic writing and publishing as well? That's different.
Yes, it is. It is also, but like because I think they're overlapping.
Because it comes from objectivity. Like for me, artistic writing and publishing does not have objectivity, and nobody claims that. Neither
academic work has objectivity.
Yeah, but then the objectivity question belongs to the academic world, which claims that, but does not belong to the artistic world that has never ever claimed that.
But
or if someone does, that would be like.
Okay. Then let's try to find a bridge. And
okay,
it's artistic research.
Let's shake hands.
Artistic research is trying to do a bit of this.
Yes.
And. This is not a critique to artistic research, but it's more like the idea of polluting academia from the art perspective instead of vice versa. So try to bring a bit of the non-objectivity into the so-called objectivity. So in that sense, I think I wanted to be a question, but also a question for a proposition or a question for like. What is the future of the idea of doing research with video? And
research with video?
Yes.
What's the future? I don't know.
What do you wish for the future?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Then in the meantime, someone is playing a video game in our background.
Are these questions we can continue while
over
drinking?
The drinks, yes.
In the bar.
I agree. I think we can wrap it up.
I think these are like longer conversations we can have.
And
thank you.
Not under the light.
it doesn't affect me. I'm looking this way, but for you, it's
for
like,
I also have been hours under this.
Yeah.
So, thank you so much. This
thank
was such
so
a
much.
Nice
yeah.
and incredibly interesting conversation. We learned a lot.
Me too.
And
we're in a. Where are we?
We are in a few words.
I was like, I don't recognize this. Oh, cool. What is it?
It's a future of video research.
The future? Yeah! You gave the answer. Thank you.
Thanks. And with this, we close the streaming. Thank you so much for everybody watching. Who I don't know if there's anybody watching right now.
Our mothers.
Are they?
I don't think so. No.
But, mine is. For
greetings to all of the mothers. Ciao.